Well, we meet again. Hey, everybody, it's Connor. Thank you so much for downloading and listening to this week's episode of Drama with Ali Mazi. I think you're really going to love it. Before we dive in, really quick, I want to encourage you to check out our Patreon, patreon.com/adramapodcast, where for $5 a month, you get added to our Instagram close friends and you get extra bonus episodes where Dylan and I chit-chat away about theater, pop culture, love, and life. Again, that's patreon.com/thedramapodcast. You can support the pod, and you get even more drama. What more could you ever want in literal life? All right, now enjoy this one with Ali Mazi, and I will see you in a few seconds. Bye!
Press play.
Curtain of an hour in.
It's time to take spin.
The shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama.
Ooh, that's a tweet. Did they book?
Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today?
Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more.
Drama.
Drama. Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I'm Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell. You know, I'm already talking a little bit today and I can feel the pride strain on my voice.
Your voice was normal until 10 minutes ago. It's kind of iconic.
It's like, oh, I knew I was going to be recorded in perpetuity. So it all of a sudden became raspy.
But Dylan, we made it through another pride season. I mean,
I'm relieved.
It's such a relief. Oh my
God. It's so much fun. It's just, there's so many, you know, the planning of the outfits, the events, the...
I'm done being gay for the next 11 months. Just kidding.
If only pride isn't just a month, you know. Pride is 365 days a year.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
But it was so fun. What a great year. It was like,
yes.
I feel like a redemption from last year in a lot of ways where we
totally.
Were a little too messy.
Yes.
It was unwell.
But we're grown. We're grown now.
Yeah, for sure. What was your highlight of the last, like, two weeks?
I would say my favorite thing that happened, I'm going to go with New York Pride.
Okay.
Because we got to see our friends Joel and Lloyd from London who came to town. Obviously, Joel Harper Jackson was on the podcast.
Yes.
Was that a year and a half ago?
About, ago? Yeah, yeah.
And just spending time with them and showing them what New York Pride is, American Pride, in the capacity we were able to, meant a lot to me. It made me even more proud.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. I mean, they'd never been to like an American drag brunch before.
Mm-hmm.
Tipping a drag queen was a novelty for them.
Yeah, because they don't do that over there.
They don't do it in London.
That's because they actually pay their queens what they're worth.
Period.
It's like an appearance fee, performance fee. But
that was such a highlight.
It was so much fun. What about you?
I know this sounds corny, but going to the parade, well, it reminds me of how huge the community is and how supportive people are of the LGBTQ+ community.
Period.
But also, I, as like a closeted little boy in Ohio, never even could have dreamed that like thousands and thousands and thousands of people would be in support of the gay community. And
oh my gosh, yes.
So it's like so cool to see everyone out there. Like yesterday at the parade, we were just standing there and this mom was there.
Yeah.
With, you know, she doesn't have a queer child. She mentioned that she just likes going to the parade to support.
And yeah, like, that was so beautiful. He was just like supporting, and it ended up her kid also went to Ohio State.
Oh yeah, that was kind of
we went to. It was just like, you know, you can't swing a Buckeye without hitting another Buckeye right here. But
I know.
It was really cool. Yeah, I love that. You know what always makes me emotional is the free mom hugs.
Oh, that's so sweet.
It's like, oh, for those kids that don't, you know, their parent might not accept them or whatever. Oh my gosh, Pride is so special, and you know, it's not all about the parties or all of that. It to me really meant the people you're spending time with and celebrating your, yes. So it was amazing. And of course, I'm still here in New York a little bit longer.
I know.
But by the time this comes out, I'll be home. But we also have the Taylor Swift Eras tour to look forward to. You know, summer is in full swing.
Still going
to
be a great summer.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, Dylan, we're here today for a very special reason.
Yes.
Because we have a gaggy guest on the pod. And I'm going to read the bio to bring her in.
I'm so excited when this name pops up.
100%. We have received this request so many times. Like, mm-hmm. when are you having her on?
Mm-hmm.
The times now.
One of my favorite performances of this last Broadway season.
For sure.
In a tricky role.
I've said this many times, but I believe it to be the trickiest role in Kimberly Akimbo. But
as we do.
All right, here we go. I'm going to read the introduction that you so beautifully wrote. All right. So our guest today is an absolute Broadway icon, currently starring in Kimberly Akimbo as Patty, a role she originated at the Atlantic Theater Company before the show was the most decorated Tony-winning musical at the recent ceremony.
Most recently on Broadway, our guest was the scene-stealing Ernestina in Hello, Dolly. She's perhaps best known to national audiences as the 10th anniversary Broadway Glinda in Wicked, a role she also performed on the first national tour and the San Francisco Company. In 2008, she won a Theater World Award and was nominated for a Drama League Award for her captivating turn as Lenora in the musical Crybaby. She appeared as Brenda in Hairspray, both on Broadway and in the original Company of the First National Tour, also covering the role of Penny Pickleton. Wait, I feel like she'd be so good.
Oh my God,
Penny.
I know.
Other credits include New York City Center Encores, The Golden Apple, and It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman, Kristen Chenoweth's For the Girls Broadway Concerts, and the off-Broadway production of Red Eye of Love. Regionally, she has starred in City of Angels, 110 in the Shade, and Little Shop of Horrors at the Muni, for which she was nominated for a Kevin Kline Award. She's also lent her immense talent to symphonies and orchestras nationwide. She's a comedy queen, a powerhouse vocalist, and a brilliant actor, no matter the medium. Please welcome to drama, Allie Mazzie.
Okay, that bio sounds like you took a little bit of Wikipedia, a little bit of an actual like Playbill bio, maybe an old bio I had from my symphony work. I was like, I've heard all pieces of these before, and it's like making me giggle.
Yes, I Frankenstein the bios a lot of.
Yeah.
A little bit of that. Anything we left out that you're like, oh, they didn't mention this?
No, but you could have left out Red Eye of Love, and I wouldn't have cared.
In one of your interviews, I read that you don't normally include that in your bio, but I was like, you know what? We cover
well here, but here's the deal, like when you have a Playbill bio, like most of us are limited on word count, so things get left out, and that one just, you know, it's a lot. So actually there are a lot of things left out of my bio in Playbill. That just happens to be one of them, you know,
like the Carousel Dinner Theater in Akron, Ohio. I mean,
that's right, we were talking about the Carousel Dinner Theater in Akron, Ohio. Yeah, I don't list that one either, but I kind of forget about that one sometimes.
What was the show?
We did a West Side Story.
Oh,
one of my faves.
I know, it is one of my favorite musicals. That and like Ragtime are like two of my favorite musicals.
Ooh. Yeah, have you ever done Ragtime?
No, I've never done it.
I think it's time.
I know. I guess I could now.
I think you're almost at the age for. Is the character just called Mother?
To be honest, I don't know. I've actually never read the script. I've just seen it 1,000 times.
Right, of course. I think it's just Mother, mm-hmm. the late Maren Maisie role.
I know. You know, I worked with Maren. One of my first job after the Hairspray tour, I only stayed 6 months on the Hairspray tour, and I left, and I worked at this is a crazy cast. I worked at the Pasadena Playhouse. We did 110 in the Shade, and Maren Maisie was the lead, and her husband Jason was one of the other leads, and she's in like a love triangle. And then Ben Davis, who's now in New York, New York,
yeah,
was the other guy. And Tom Wilson, if anyone's a Back to the Future movie fan, he's Biff in Back to the Future.
Oh my God.
Amongst many other credits. I don't want to diminish him to that amazing role, but he played one of the brothers. Let's see. Adam Lambert, famous Adam Lambert.
Wow.
Was also, he was in the ensemble, but they also gave him Dance Captain, which we all like laughed at. And he was like blonde at the time. And I just remember like my sister used to work for MAC Makeup. And so she was taking me shopping one day to get like a discount. He wanted to come because he wanted like glitter. And so he'd go makeup shopping with us. But yeah, it's crazy. It was like, that was a very long time ago, but it was like kind of a stacked cast. But I got to work with Maren, who you brought up. I loved working with Maren.
Are the rumors all true? She was just the most genuine, generous person.
Yeah, she's lovely. And so, and you know, Jason, everybody just as lovely. They were like such a beautiful couple.
Aww.
Beautiful, beautiful couple. And I actually just loved getting to observe their relationship. You could tell they really cared for each other very much. And I just loved watching that, you know.
That's really sweet.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Oh
so
gosh.
Did you, so what year was that? Because I know Adam was in Wicked eventually, and you were also in Wicked. Did you ever overlap in Wicked?
No, because we just did different companies. I think, did he just do the Los Angeles company?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, I never did LA, but like that LA company went up to San Francisco for a couple years. And I did the last 2 months of the San Francisco company. But
remember that.
But there was a lot of leftover LA people from that company. But Adam, I don't think Adam went up there at all in San Francisco.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like American Idol happened and then, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Well, because I remember doing Wicked in New York at some point. Paul Abdul came randomly. And that was right after Adam had like gotten huge off from American Idol, and we were all like, oh my God, please tell Adam hi, we haven't seen him in so long, you know.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's so funny. Are you, I picture you as being the same height as Paul Abdul.
Paul Abdul, I'm probably, if I remember correctly, a little taller than Paula Abdul.
Okay.
But of all the fun celebrities that came to Wicked, she is one of my most memorable. She was so friendly and nice and really just like interactive. She was so complimentary and she complimented everybody backstage. She was like a class act. Like no one was ever who came back was, I don't have any memories of anybody like being like nasty or like, but sure. Like by far though, she was like just kind of amazing and perfect, you know?
Yeah. That's was there, so was there ever anybody that you were like starstruck to meet?
Taylor Swift came with her mom for her mom's birthday right before she was. That's so funny because you were just talking about Taylor Swift. It was right. It was she was in town the very first time she was going to be on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, cool.
So she was still she was a big deal then, but I guess she wasn't the huge deal she is now. But she was a big deal. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. I think like what made that a comfortable interaction was I asked her how she was doing and how it was feeling she was gonna be on Saturday Night Live, and she expressed like having nerves, and that just made her like very normal. So yeah. It was a very easy interaction. I don't know why when Usher was there, not that I listen to Usher's music really. But I like a lot of his music, but I don't know why I just couldn't really talk to Usher.
I would probably have the same problem. I mean, he had his moment, you know.
But also too, like he was there with one of his kids. So in those moments, you just make it about the kids, and he didn't really say a whole lot either. You could tell he was like content with the interaction with the kids. So yeah. I just kind of read the room, and sometimes, you know, people are just fine to just chill and not say much, you know?
Yeah. And also sure. They're there to meet you, you know, cause they just saw you doing it.
I know. Isn't that funny? I know. I'm trying to think if there's anybody I like really spazzed out about. If I think about it, something might pop up. But at the moment, like everybody, so far the interactions were like just cool bonus stuff. I mean, Oprah came once, but she ducked out. She came with two of her students from her school. Is there a school in Africa? I don't want to get that one. But she came with two of her top students, but they ducked out during the bows, probably to we weren't sure if we were going to meet her or not.
Yeah. Isn't there like a secret exit from the stage door that sometimes the Glindas and Alphabets take? Do they sneak up Oprah out that way?
No, because she would have had to come. I mean, I do remember her leaving through the house. Now, whether they ended up sneaking her through that door, they could have. I don't know where once she left the house where they. I mean, I'm sure. I don't know. I don't know where they took Oprah. To be honest,
there was a helicopter waiting somewhere.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, iconic. Yeah, there's some cool celebrities who have come to see Kimberly Akimbo as well. I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, we just had Rebel Wilson came, which was kind of cool.
That's so fun.
And here's the deal: like sometimes they find out celebrities who have come, but like. We'll find out like after the fact. Janine, who was it that came? Why am I blanking? It's a singer-songwriter. It'll come back to me. Janine, I'm going to feel so dumb saying this, but you know, James Taylor. I think it was
Taylor. Yeah. Okay, cool.
And Janine found out after that. Janine just sort of found out after the fact. And she's like, you guys, can you believe James Taylor came to the show? You know, like it was kind of amazing.
Wow.
You know, sometimes you find out after, because you know, sometimes I think celebrities, they just want to come see the show and head out. Like sure. Billie Eilish was one of those. She was, you know, like, out with somebody I think she was on a date with and wanted to keep it chill.
Yeah.
It's harder now though, because like not everybody, like most people aren't wearing masks anymore. So I feel like people like that can't hide out like they used to, you know?
That's true. The mask moment, which we obviously were forced into because of the pandemic, but it was a good way for celebs to stay incognito when they were going around for sure.
So.
Especially in the theater. But anyway, Molly, we started diving right into your little like backstage meetups with honestly huge celebrities.
But... What if we just talked about everybody else but me?
We need to get. I know this. Like usually, like actors love to talk about themselves, but you're being so generous and talking about everybody else. But
oh gosh,
I'm gonna empower you with all the praise, Allie. Don't worry.
Please.
We do like to sort of, you know, meet our guests where they're at. You're in this post Tony's bliss, probably. Are you well?
I am well. I'm feeling more rested now. Then during Tony season, but you know, I've run the gamut with Tony season. I know what it's like to be on top of the world, and I know what it's like to have your show close the next week during Tony season. So it's like I also recognize like these are all, you know, blessings to be had no matter how tired, and also like, you know, it's just like, okay, this is like a chunk of my life. This is not forever. So yeah, now I'm excited. Like it's summer. I'm looking forward to getting some extra time with my kid when he's not in school every day.
Yeah.
So I'm like amped and energized at the moment for a fun summer.
That's so special. And summer in New York, there's so much to do. You know, there are a
summer
lot of
in New York is so hot though.
So hot.
It's muggy hot. I grew up in California at the dry heat, which I can handle a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I'm game for it. I'm gonna do all the things, but muggy heat is not my thing.
It's bad. Yeah. It's
really, but what you were saying, I think like there's a lot to do here.
There's tons to do. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. But it is just so hot. It's crazy. Like you can't wear a backpack without your entire back getting soaked in sweat or, you know, it's just, at least that's me. But we need to talk about Kimberly Akimbo. Mm-hmm. Which,
okay.
Oh my God. Best musical.
I know. Okay. And that's something like we won and it's just fun. It's just fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like I feel very uncomfortable with the competition part of it and what we do. Like it's so strange to me and how things and people and shows like get singled out because I just want to be like, we're all like, it's so hard to mount new musicals. I just think we're all winners, but it's also really fun. It's just mm-hmm. like, it was fun to like win that night and it was fun to get on stage and be there. And it was fun to go to the party afterwards and everybody like took their Tonys out and they were on the table next to the food and we were all spinning them around. And our first show back was amazing. Like the fans were amazing. And like it felt a little bit like a rock concert in terms of like what you could have for a rock concert at Kimberly Akimbo.
Sure.
They were so vocal and they just hung out at the stage door and we spent so much time together at the stage door. It was fun. It was just a big celebration, you know?
Yeah, deservedly so. I knew a lot of people on Twitter I was seeing, huge fans of the show who bought tickets in anticipation of the show winning, like just hoping.
I had to imagine that was the case, right? I imagine fans from every show probably did that, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm, for sure.
Because we were definitely, you know, sold out. So yeah, whoever had tickets there that night had to have had them ahead of time, you know?
Yeah. I think every single gay who I know was there Tuesday night.
They were all posting the picture from the curtain call with the
anagram.
Yeah.
Cool. I loved that.
I did too. I actually, I'm glad that got captured on video too. I also thought it was a really good way to celebrate the whole cast. Because you know, that's the thing, like lots of people get singled out, but this really is such like an ensemble piece that it was like a cool moment. And then it was fun because Janine and David, we needed two more people to fill in the letters. So Janine, Tesori, David, Lindsay Bear were there and that was super fun too.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Allie, you are so amazing in the show.
Yes, we have to single you out though. We do. I know you mentioned it's not everybody, but
seriously, Father Time is one of the most beautiful songs I've ever heard in or out of a theater. You know,
thank you.
Your performance is just beyond. Oh I get chills every time I hear it. I mean, I cry every time I see it.
Yeah, when Connor took me to see, because he had seen it a few times before I saw it, and I'll never forget looking at him crying. And then, of course, when he cries, I cry. It's like a twin. Yeah. So, like, but oh my gosh! And then I was like, oh, this is such a moment, you know. And there's something with the way that you take your time with it in moments, you know, to make sure that certain lines or lyrics really resonate. And it's really a special performance. Thank you for delivering it as such.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for noticing and thanks for the kind words.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the first time you heard the song?
Yeah, I mean, it was I had two different auditions for this show. The second time I went in for it was for the workshop in 2019. And here's the deal. They gave me Father Time to sing. And so I don't remember if it was the whole song or not, but I think I missed the mark the first time I sang this song in my audition. Because in my mind, it's like midnight. Kimberly is asleep. So even when like the notes got high, I was keeping it very soft. I'm singing a lullaby. I don't want to wake anybody in the house. You know, like I took it very literal. And I remember Janine like stopping and she's like almost like, what is happening right now? And she was like, this is supposed to be belty, blah, blah, blah. And I was like really thrown because I didn't know how to react in that moment. Because I definitely was just like, but if I sing belty, I'm going to wake the baby kind of a thing. And I definitely feel like I hadn't practiced the song in that way. So I don't really feel I was prepared vocally to sing it in that way, but I gave it a good go. I don't think it was my best audition for what maybe like Janine wanted at the time. So it was very fascinating to me that down the line, I got asked to do it. And, you know, we definitely had to work out that song like when we were at the Atlantic, because it was a necessary song for Patty, because you really, you know, outside of that song, Patty could just be really prickly. I think, in a lot of parts. And so we really need to see like her love for her child and her fear of losing her child. And so that song really in some way has to exist, but it had to kind of make sense besides the fact that we just needed some insight into Patty. So I actually think it took like all of Atlantic to figure out like, okay, like she's singing to her child. She's saying, okay, we're singing lullaby to her baby in her belly right now. Those are the first two verses. And then eventually that needs to turn to Kim. And I think it was Jessica Stone's husband, Chris Fitzgerald, who was like, there you go. Like, you guys got it. You know, like he saw the show one night. He's like, I remember he saw the workshop. He goes, I love that song. I don't fully understand what it's doing yet. You know, and it actually used to exist in a different part of the scene. It actually used to exist in the workshop before, right before Aunt Deborah comes in. But now it's actually the end of the scene. So they even shifted like where it went. So it just took a moment, I think, for it to find its place. Mm-hmm. But it was always that song, at least from when I started with the piece, which was during the workshop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and to your point, like it's such a necessary moment for Patty, to which I said earlier, I think is the trickiest role in the show, because like you said, she's so prickly at times. You get to know her in that moment of what she's really feeling inside. And the audience just loves Patty.
It's tough.
I'm actually so intrigued when I've run the gamut this season of answering questions about Patty, and people sometimes don't really know what to do with her. I'm so fascinated. I've never played a character where some people are either baffled or put off or confused because they're like, oh my gosh, she said that, but oh my gosh, I love her. Like, it's very confusing. So I'm actually more intrigued about what your guys' reaction is to her. Cause I also find it fascinating that I do feel like in a lot of musicals, we want to like our characters mm-hmm. for some reason. Like, we have this fascination with likability. And the thing is with a character like Patty, it's like, I think that's what's been fun about playing this. It's just like, she's not just one thing.
Yeah.
And she's like most of us, we're not all likable all the time, you know?
Sure.
It's been a learning curve for me to like be okay with it. Oh, I think it's been a real gift in that way for me as an actor.
Mm-hmm. I think she's relatable too. You know, she is a bit of a hypochondriac. Mm-hmm. And there's elements of that I think make her sort of sympathetic, you know, because she's imperfect. She is still kind of figuring out how to be a mom, or she wants to get it right the second time around. And
yeah.
I think that there's definitely like a relatability of just the nature of that character. It's interesting being in that small house too, the way that you're able to like receive it and the dialogue. I'm sure it was interesting at the Atlantic to what you saw it there.
Yeah. So intimate there.
Yeah, I know. Plus when we were at the Atlantic, we were coming out of, we were all getting our feet wet again, like being back at live theater. And then the Omicron or whatever hit, but like as fast as people still kept coming to the theater. And like those audiences were really special because they were like, they wanted to be there, mm-hmm. you know? It was strange at times with the rise and fall of the COVID part of it, but like the relationship at the Atlantic, I think between audience and story was really cool.
Yeah, mm-hmm. for sure. And she gets some of the funniest lines too, Patty. I think that's also why the audience connects with you. I mean, the Panera bread bowl.
Oh my God. It's like one of my favorite lines. I don't even need to do anything with that line. It's just like, I just say it. And it's just like, it's such a fun, David wrote such a funny line.
Oh yeah. Absolutely genius. Absolutely. Yeah. And I love that he also was participated in the score, because sometimes a musical doesn't necessarily work if the book writer and then the song and lyrics aren't, or the music and lyrics aren't the same. It feels like they might be foreign to each other. Whereas that sense of humor and that sensibility and the smartness is in both because of that marriage. And I think that's why it won, obviously, but
I know.
So smart. Janine can work with anybody.
I know. Everybody says that about Janine. She can kind of, and she was also saying she prefers, you know, she loves working with playwrights, like, you know, like David. David said some interesting stuff lately about he's also been in a position where he's written the book but not the lyrics, and he's like, you write up to a certain point and then your job's done and someone takes over with the lyrics. He also said recently, he's like, sometimes in that situation you write something so well that they're like, this is amazing, you need to make it a song. But he's like, he helped create that, but then he's not charged with writing the lyrics of the song anymore.
Mm.
So I don't want to speak on his behalf, but I think he prefers the book writer and lyrics, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I think Tom Meehan did a good job of that too, with all of his work over the years, Thomas Meehan. And he was Crybaby, right?
Yeah, he was one of the book writers.
One of the book writers. Okay.
Oh, Mark O'Donnell is a genius too, though. So,
and yeah, and then so that's a case where, and then David Jeverbaum wrote the lyrics. So, okay. Yeah.
We, you know, you mentioned earlier you've had the opposite experience at the Tonys and whatnot. I'm guessing you were talking about Cry Baby.
Yeah.
And I think that was the first Tony Awards we watched.
Yeah. And I remember being obsessed with the performance that y'all did for Cry Baby.
Yeah. It was the jailhouse number, right? Where they were tapping on license plates with their, yes, on their feet. Yeah. Isn't that cool?
It was such a great showcase of the musical, I think.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I don't know what the climate really was back then for, was that 07 or 08?
I'm going to say yes to both those numbers because, yes, it was right around then.
They both feel right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's shocking to me that there wasn't like a, you know, a big influx of tickets sold the next day, but maybe people weren't looking for that type of musical at that time. You know, it's,
that stuff's like weird, right? Like, yeah, we weren't selling well before then. So if we didn't win anything to boost ticket sales, like, it was just the writing was on the wall. I think they showcased that number, the Tony Awards, because I think if we had any, I don't actually remember. I think that might have been the In the Heights year.
I think you're right.
But if we had a chance of winning anything that year, it would have been Choreography, which is probably why they showcased it.
Yeah, for sure.
Totally. Rob Ashford. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, genius. I mean, in your Screw Loose number, I mean, I remember that they had you performing at every possible, yeah, opportunity, because it's just such a brilliant, first of all, character, yeah, moment, but also, I mean, girl, you can sing. I mean, that was, you do. I mean, I know that you're a soprano and you can, yeah, you know, but you, the way that you're able to settle into a just a regular chest voice, then also go up there is really impressive. And I think that was maybe like a star making turn for you. Did you feel like you arrived?
Well, in some ways, yeah, it was, gosh, I look back at that now. There was a lot, honestly, there was a lot of attention coming my way.
Mm-hmm.
And it was bizarre because I hadn't had that before. I had been working for a while, but like, no, I had a lot of attention come my way. And so, yeah, I think it was kind of important in the terms of visibility and, you know, other jobs to come. But yeah, then it was like terrifying when we got like our closing notice after the Tony Awards on that next literally two days later that we were going to close at the end of the week. And, you know, it's disappointing because you work so hard on something for years. You help develop something for years. And then you're like, so we're done? Like, this is it? And then, of course, there's the part where, like, you're like, oh my gosh, I think a lot of us had a first time experience since, oh my God, I have a Broadway show for like a year or more. Mm-hmm. And so like, we all have fancy apartments and like all this stuff. And then you get your closing notice. You're like, oh my God, am I going to have to move? Because there's like the logistics part of things. But I also think, like, you know, sometimes there's certain like rites of passages, I think. And so I think that's one of them. Like, I, because of that experience and knowing what it takes to mount a musical from scratch, it's really hard. And it's really hard for all the pieces to come together. And so when I see new musicals, because of that experience, I'm like the least judgy person sitting in the mm-hmm. theater, because it's really, really, it's hard, mm-hmm. you know? Even when you've spent a lot of time on it, it's like, it's really hard to get it right.
Yeah, yeah. I can imagine. Did John Waters have any role in the musical adaptation of Cry Baby?
I mean, not necessarily. He would pop in and out, but like, I think he was comfortable with letting everybody do what they wanted to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you got to figure, like, the tone of the Hairspray musical even is slightly different than the, yeah, John Waters movie, you know?
For sure. Yeah.
Thankfully.
So, you know, so when they were shifting that, like, so I think he probably just trusted everybody with his material. But, you know, I have a couple favorite memories of John. Like, he was there when after the Tony Awards, and he came and he talked with all of us, and he goes, you know what? He's like, I was tired of being mainstream anyway, is what he said.
He is rather punk rock in that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, for
and
sure.
The other thing he used to tell me was that if he were to have a song played at his funeral, it would be Screw Loose, is what he said.
Oh.
He really relates to that song.
Aww. That feels right, for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it could come after Cry Baby ended.
Well, you know, I signed on with Wicked first as a standby, and I was supposed to be there for a while, but I had an out for Cry Baby. So I think like 3 months before we went out of town in San Diego for Cry Baby, I was on Broadway doing standby for like 3 months. Like, yeah. I was supposed to stay longer, but anyway.
Was that for Megan Hilty?
It was for Kendra Kassabaum at the time.
Oh, yeah.
But then after Cry Baby closed, then I took over.
Okay.
right after, so that was around like right after the fifth, like right after Kendra left, actually.
Yeah.
It was right after that fifth anniversary. A bunch of us came in this post Cardi B, where I took over.
Okay. You were such a beloved Glinda.
Mm-hmm. We sadly never got to see you, but you know.
Oh my God. Well, we can see clips online sometimes now.
I know. Isn't that funny that everything exists like that? I know that I have such fond memories of Wicked. I mean, I was there on and off for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just loved playing that role. And that show's so epic. It's like you hear that music and it like the opening, and it just kind of like takes you somewhere, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And I still feel that way. And then I also feel ways like when it was like not long after I'd finished a contract, I'd hear that music and I'd be like, oh God, okay. If you're like, this feels like the end of the week, you know? Like,
mm-hmm.
But I still get nostalgic. I'd be lying if I didn't say when Broadway was bouncing back after, you know, the pandemic, it was when I was doing Kimberly Kimbo at the Atlantic, but everybody was being pulled off the bench to come in for these roles here or there. Like, and I was like, oh my God, I would love to go into Wicked for like a week or two.
Oh,
I knew it wouldn't happen because David Stone is producer of both Kimberly Kimbo and Wicked, and I was busy doing his show.
Yeah. So,
you know.
You still got it in you, Glinda? You've got it. You've got
No, I could totally do it. I could totally do that show. I love that. Well, that's the kind of singing I love to do, all that soprano mm-hmm. stuff. I miss it, you know?
You're good. I've probably changed a lot from the beginning to then. You were ultimately there for the 10th anniversary. With
10th anniversary cast was Lindsay Mendez,
mm-hmm.
Derek Klena. I'm trying to think who else was there at the time.
Maybe Carol Kane.
Carol Kane was there. Yeah. Yeah, that was fun. That was the last time I did it, was the 10th anniversary.
Okay.
That was fun.
Yeah. Was that a very electric performance?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also too, like a lot of the alumni come back. So it's like a family reunion
mm-hmm.
in a lot of ways. And it's a lot of people, you know, I'd worked with. And then a lot of the, I always thought it was really special. Like that night, a lot of the original company comes back who I've met throughout the years or didn't meet throughout the years. But like I saw the show with the original company. So I just think everybody's like amazing in that original company. So I thought it was cool when they came back and still wanted to come back and see it and see who these strangers are doing their show, you know?
Right. That is probably a strange sensation for sure. When you first saw it, knowing, you know, that's the kind of singing you like to do is the kind that Glinda does. Were you like watching Kristen being all like, wait, I need to play Glinda?
That wasn't on my, I don't think it was on my radar. I don't think like that often when I go see yeah. shows. I'm like the yeah. last one to know I should go in for a part sometimes. I'm like, because, and honestly, before I went in for it, when I first went in for Wicked, I think I had like my biggest thing I had done so far was ensemble in Hairspray.
Okay.
So even my agent at the time, I was living out in Los Angeles and they were having auditions for Wicked in Los Angeles. And I called my agent and said, I think I should get seen for Wicked. And he was like, for which part, kind of a thing. And I was like, anyway, my agent did not get me on an audition for Wicked. And I just showed up to the open call. And then Bernie Telsey was there and he knows me from Hairspray and he's reading these names. He goes, Allie Mazzi. He goes, Allie, what are you doing? Get in the room. Like, I could have gotten an audition. My yeah. agent just didn't see me in. And then I sang, I don't remember what I sang that day, but then they actually called me back for Glinda and Elphaba.
Oh.
Probably, I don't know if that meant for an internal cover. I don't know what it meant. But my voice teacher was like, that's confusing to them. Just go in with one.
Okay.
And vocally, I think Glinda just made more sense.
Sure.
So I just did the Glinda stuff.
Wow, there's another life where you were singing No Good Deed.
I know, man. I was like, I always used to joke, like, I would love to do Wicked with somebody, with Glinda and Elphaba, and we swap halfway through the week and we get to play the other part.
Yes.
Because I don't really know if I want to play Elphaba 8 times a week, you know? Yeah. those girls have, I mean, I think both girls have their work cut out for them, but those Elphabas, man, really have their work cut out for them. So I was like, I'll do half the week. We'll switch.
For sure. Gosh, Wicked was one of those shows that when we first heard of it, you know, mm-hmm. back when it first came out, it really got us into theater.
Yeah.
And thinking about that, we ask all of our guests about the moment that got them into the arts as well.
Yeah.
It may have been a show you were seeing, or maybe you were singing in the choir or doing a play at school, whatever it may be to you. Could have been when you were a kid or could have been last year. We borrow the term Ring of Keys from Fun Home because it's like that moment of recognition. Do you feel like you had a Ring of Keys moment that got you into the arts?
I love the Ring of Keys. Ring of Keys reference because I'm doing a Janine Tesori show.
Yeah, I know, right?
I'll start with this. Like, it, things have like are slow burn for me. I don't have a lot of like necessarily aha moments in, mm-hmm. when it comes to, like, this is what I want to do for a living. I just think like it was just, music was always in me and it just was a great fit. But yeah. I'll say this about a Ring of Keys moment. When I was in high school, my friend Cameron, my gay friend Cameron.
Yes, shout out to Cameron. Happy Pride, Cameron.
Yes, exactly. Happy Pride. He knew everything about Broadway. I mean, everything about all that stuff. So like, I just like learned things through him. And I remember cutting class because we used to cut fifth period and lunch often. Half the time, it was when ragtime was in Los Angeles. So we would go second act ragtime.
Oh my God.
But sometimes if we weren't doing that, like I went over to his house and he goes, you have to watch this video. It was some of you don't even know what this is. It was a VHS tape, people. And he put in this VHS tape and it was the Tony Awards the year that Judy Kuhn was singing in Rags and was singing in Les Miserables. I don't know if you guys know this night or not.
No. She did both in the same ceremony?
You guys have to track it down. This is my ring. This is, if I have a Ring of Keys moment, this is my moment. Because I think she was doing Rags and maybe Rags closed, but they were still nominated for stuff. So she sang, and it's with Dick Latessa. Oh, yes. And then her second performance, she was this belty song. And then the second performance that he showed me same night was her singing Cosette in Les Mis. And, you know, we were talking about how, like, maybe, like, my voice does, like, belty stuff and soprano-y stuff. And I can't necessarily tell you what that Ring of Keys moment was for me. Except, and I met Judy for the first time a couple months ago. She came to the show. And I told her the story. I was like, I wasn't, like, a Broadway enthused and, like, I have to listen to Broadway all the time. But watching both those performances on those Tony Awards for me, like, mattered to me. I don't know what it was. I don't know if I saw myself in that or saw a path for myself in that, or if it was more like, oh gosh, if she can do it, I can do it kind of a thing. I just found it incredibly impressive and incredibly inspiring. And I was in awe of the versatility mm-hmm. of it. It was like, I don't know. All I said to her was like, it mattered. It mattered to me that I saw you perform that night. You guys have to go. It's got to be on YouTube now.
Cameron is mad at us right now because he's like, these bad theater gays don't know. Judy Kuhn did Rad.
And here's the deal. I don't even know how Cameron knew about some of this stuff unless he recorded it. He probably just recorded it
mm-hmm.
off his TV because that was pre-YouTube. That was pre-internet. Like the internet was just like getting going, I feel like, for all of us at home. So I don't even, he just was so in tune with all this. He was telling me like who to listen to and what to, but
That was late 80s for Les Mis, right? Mid to late 80s, maybe? No, it was early 90s in...
Oh, yeah, because here's the deal. He wouldn't have recorded it. We would have been... Because he didn't show it to me until late 90s. So yeah. I don't know when that would have been. I don't know why he had that VHS. I don't know why. I actually never asked him.
Yeah.
You know?
How did Judy react when you told her how much those performances meant to you?
First of all, she said, oh my gosh, not everybody knows that. She knew that I knew about those performances. So you guys don't feel too bad.
But I don't know. Thank you, Allie. Thank you.
You should know and spread the word because it's quite impressive. But I got choked up telling her. And I think she was touched by what I told her. Mm-hmm. She was there with her daughter. I think it meant something to her that I told her that. Look, I have to assume a lot of people like gush over Judy Kuhn, I guess. I do. Like, I just think the world of her. And I've been a fan. She's one of maybe two voices that I actually paid attention to, like in my little tiny journey up until where I'm at now. Like I said, I wasn't the one out buying cast albums, you know. But what if she was singing, my ears perked up. So she was almost like a guiding pillar or a guiding light, maybe, that I like directed myself to unknowingly. But like I just responded to her voice. I sort of said all this stuff to her. I think it meant something to her. She was very sweet and gracious and thanked me for saying that. And I'm just like, you don't need to thank me. I'm just like, can't believe I'm actually finally meeting you.
Yeah, right. No, she'd be good as Kimberly Akimbo.
She'd be great.
Mm-hmm. Or I guess Lavaca, not as Akimbo.
You know what? I knew I was right for Patty was we were about to do the workshop and I was talking to a guy playing Buddy. And I was like, this is going to be so fun. We're like the Akimbos. And he goes, what? He's like, no, we're the Lavacos. He goes, Akimbo. And he told me the definition of Akimbo. I was like, okay, that was really dumb. Okay, I know what I'm going to do with Patty now.
Like, oh, that's perfect. I love that so much. Adnan just now, I was like, that was Pat. That's so cute. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I love it. Oh, thank you for that story, too. I think that
you know, you had this foresight of you don't need to be one type. You know, you can be a lot of different things. And it even goes to show with the way that you were called back for both Glinda and Elphaba, you know, that you don't, you aren't just one thing.
You know, because I always felt too, I think about this now, it's like, I actually felt early on for me, type-wise, like in my high school shows or whatever, and maybe actually in college too, like, because I was a soprano, teachers automatically wanted to put me in like these ingenue roles. Mm. And as much as I tried, the way that, I mean, I just always felt a little bit like a square peg in a round hole when playing those roles. Like, I just wasn't going to be like, even if I went in for those parts regionally in California, I wasn't going to be able to give you what, like, which is what often like some CLOs will do. They want you to do the version, like be this person, like the original person, just do the thing. Mm-hmm. And like, I just am not that kind of ingenue, you know? And mm-hmm. so I think that's also what I saw with Judy. Like, she did play like an ingenue, right? Cosette, and like even her character in Rags, maybe, but like it was a belty sound. Like, it just wasn't mm-hmm. cookie cutter, and it was diverse, you know? I think you're right. I think like I responded because, oh, you don't have to just be one thing, and you don't have to just be like one type, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's so cool. Yeah. You know, we are sadly wrapping up. We want to be respectful of time, but we to end on a dose of drama, which it is the titular segment. It you is. Know, it's where it we is. We can bring up anything that's maybe on our minds that we've been thinking about today, or that's just going on outside of the podcast. Could be a pop culture recommendation or a rant or a rave. And we've covered the gambit today with you, Allie, but I'll kick it off.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. My dose of drama is this new movie, No Hard Feelings. I really want to go see it with Jennifer Lawrence. And here's why. Have you heard of this movie, Allie?
Yes, yes, yes.
I'm excited about the R-rated comedy coming back. Mm-hmm. You know, there's also going to be this movie, Bottoms, that's coming out later this summer. There's this, I don't know if Joyride movie with Ashley Park is R-rated, but
I don't know.
I love the Bridesmaids, the grown-ups, like those, that era of movies. We haven't really been, comedies haven't really been drawing people out to the theaters anymore, but I'm seeing so many people talk about Jennifer Lawrence in this movie. And of course, friend of the pod, Andrew Barth Feldman. And I am so excited to see it. And that, I think that's my dose of drama, is I'm excited about good raunchy comedies coming back.
I agree.
We want to laugh, you know?
Totally. You're right. Cause I feel like most comedies just go to like Netflix now.
Yes. And the quality isn't always there. And
sometimes
it is.
But you're right.
I'm raspy again.
I'm going to laugh in the movie theater. So you're right. Yeah. That's a good one mm-hmm. for sure. Okay. My dose of drama is that I mentioned on the pod a couple months ago that I was getting a little burnt out on my reality TV. And I sit here before you all today saying, I think I need a full break from like Housewives and those other like the Vanderpumps, those other Summer House, these shows, which I love dearly and certainly will return to, but they're just not hitting for me like the way they used to. And I'm wondering if it's an oversaturation on my end.
Maybe
a combination of like seeing all of it online before it airs and then like watching and not being fully surprised by it, or expectations being too high. But I think I want to go back to like the scripted drama or the scripted comedy on TV, which is of course happening in the middle of the strike. So that's great. But I have a lot of catching up to do on a lot of shows anyway. So reality TV will still be filming and airing and being produced, but
I know, is that interesting?
Let me catch up on some.
Well, I have lots of suggestions.
I know you do.
So we'll talk.
Yeah.
We'll talk
for sure. Anyway, Allie, do you have a dose of drama to send us home with today?
I know. I wish I was more dramatic for you all.
Oh my gosh.
You're very dramatic.
You're perfect. You brought it. You are. Yeah.
Look, I can't give you names, but there has been some reality housewives. Can I curse on this?
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah.
There's been some reality housewife shit going on backstage at Kimberly Kimbo. Uh-huh. And that has been my dose of drama lately. It doesn't concern me. It doesn't concern any of the actors either. But let me just say, the Tony Awards were so fun.
Yes.
There was a lot of celebrating and drinking.
Yes.
And there was a lot of, I don't know, cross-pollinating and things like that for people. And I just have to say, it's been like, I've just been on a fly on the wall, enjoying everybody, having fun. I feel like we're like, look, this is like, I feel like we've earned this. Like, we got to this like best musical thing and we've all worked so hard and everybody let it loose. I was like, now I feel like we're a real show in terms of like the backstage drama, like the backstage life that's going on.
Yes.
Like, I'm not one to usually spill the tea. So I would never give names, and I say more power to everybody out there who's having a good time. But Tony Knight, that was a lot of fun drama.
Oh, I love that.
That bled into the next week.
Oh, I love so that. I feel like, for better or worse, it had to happen eventually, but now COVID restrictions are up.
Oh my God, that's such a good point, right? Everybody's like, we're free. Yeah.
Everyone's free. We can feel a lot safer going everywhere.
I know, you know? Were talking to another friend who was on the podcast, and she's in another show, and she was saying that the biggest thing she missed about pre-COVID was the way that all the shows would sort of intermingle at like Glass House or other restaurants and things like that. And like, oh, you might've been dating someone in a different show. Yeah. Like maybe we're getting back to that world again.
I actually do think, because like we all went out to Glass House the other night because funny enough, it was because our COVID safety officers and stuff like that. We no longer, it was bittersweet, but we don't need them anymore. So sure. So we miss them very much, but it also means like, that's a blessing that like we've moved up to this other side of, you know, quote unquote COVID, because like we were like, let's all go to Glass House and celebrate. Like the last time someone said, I forget, it was early on in our run, let's all go to the Glass House and celebrate. And we got excited. And then producers were like, nope, you can't do right. that, you know?
It's too risky.
Yeah. But now I think like, everyone's just going out living their lives.
Well, Allie, it has been such a treat to have you. Thank you for sort of waxing poetic about some days gone by, but also chatting about the amazing show that's Kimberly Kimbo and your phenomenal performance, which I held back from saying the whole time, but I think you also should have been nominated for a Tony Award, but we can move forward.
Thanks for having me. This is fun.
Of course. Oh, I'm so glad you had fun. And the people can find you, just you're at Allie Mazzi on Twitter, and then on Instagram, it's Allie_Mazzi, right?
Correct. Yeah. That sounds about right. Yeah.
Well, everyone is following Allie. They need to follow us at The Drama Podcast for all things pod. But then also you can follow us on our personals at Dylan McDowell, at Connor McDowell.
That's right. Allie, thank you again for all of this. And Connor, I will see you next time.
Drama.